Well, welcome back, everyone. This is Charles Dudley here with Sean Decker, and we are continuing our discussion about the lost art of value. This is our third session on the knowledge piece. And for those who have been taking notes, we just finished a very in-depth discussion on weighted analysis. That was extremely eye-opening to me, Sean. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what we're getting ready to talk about?
Okay, really we've got basic two major points that we're really going to get into for the rest of the sessions and then a wrap-up, and we're going to do that all on this disc. And this last point, or the next point that I really want to get into, is your five P's, which is people, process, product, perceptions, and perspectives. Now, I won't take any credit on the people, process, and product. That's from Marcus Lemonis, and I want to give all credit to him. That's where I got that side from. But one thing that I noticed is you can deal with people, you can deal with the process, you can deal with the product, but the number one thing that I see him have the biggest problem with is the people having wrong perceptions or perspectives. And so I think there's a little bit to be added to that that is not discussed, but he does very well in addressing. And so he has to deal with this consistently and on a regular basis. So in with people, and we're going to get into the people section later today, and when we get into that section later today, or not today, but later in the CDs, we'll get into the specific people side. But on this part of it, I do want to keep in mind that we've been talking about how to weigh things, how to keep things in a systematic order for understanding and knowledge and insight and how to apply some of these different perspectives. So the next segment on this is knowledge about people. So they have a lot of different type of personality tests you can do to understand people's personalities. They have a lot of different books and coursework, those things on process. Product is usually whatever you're providing to them. And so there's 1,000 different versions of understanding product material. But probably the top one that I really want to address on this side of knowledge is perceptions and perspective. So here's a thought that kind of occurred to me while I was thinking over some of this material, is that trust is proof of how others value you. So that's part of, again, the weighted analysis. People say, well, you know, I'm not sure if that's completely accurate. We've got to ask yourself, if people trust you, then they value you. And the proof that they value you is when they ask you to do things or when they believe that whatever you said, you're capable of. So trust is proof of how people actually value you. The other side of that, though, is character and integrity is proof of how you value yourself. So, and again, you can say, okay, well, how's that line up with the previous part, which is a weighted analysis? Well, weighted analysis is that how were things considered? Well, character, if you do something, if you're willing to do a particular thing, and you're not sure what comes first, well, then that tells you that the integrity or your character in that decision or your consistency of your decision is lacking. And so, because if you can't do the same thing over and over, where's the character and integrity? So if you're always going to show up on time for work, always do your best, always, those are the parts of character integrity which show that you value what you say, that you value what you're going to do. And so when you're willing to consistently do things, then you are demonstrating how you actually weighted yourself, weighted your decisions. When you say, hey, I'm going to get up every morning and run a mile. If you run a mile for one day and then you quit, well, there's not much in character integrity. So that decision that you had is of very little weight to you. You didn't actually believe what you said, because if you had character and integrity, it would have proved what you valued.
That's interesting, Sean, because the other side of that we were just discussing offline, but valuing the decision and being consistent, like you're saying, also other people being able to depend on you because they know just like the sun rises, the sun sets. If Sean says we have a meeting at 9 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever, we know Sean's there, as opposed to half the time you're there and half the time you're not.
Absolutely. And that's actually how people weight you. See, the first part of point three, I haven't digressed. The first point was people. And so how do you weight people? Well, based off of your trust. That's how you value them. So how you weight the people is dependent upon your trust, which can be based off of research. Matter of fact, one of the things I heard actually just last night from Marcus Lemonis, he said, is that he was asking a particular woman a bunch of questions, and she felt that she was being attacked in the questioning, and he just simply said, ma'am, I'm just doing my due diligence. So the questions was not a lack of trust. It was proof of what she was saying so he could value her to a certain level so he could decide on his decision.
Yeah, I love that show too, by the way. I think you got me hooked on it. But the thing that's interesting about that, I've made this observation with my wife, and I want everybody to realize everything in this teaching is important. But the people component that Sean's kind of digging into right now, it's interesting because people as a concept is one of the principles of value, but it's also belongs here with the numbers concept or the knowledge concept, I apologize. So the thing is, every time I've seen people be successful in that show, it's always because they're willing to be submitted, they're willing to be humble, they're willing to be teachable, and recognize, I don't know everything. As opposed to the ones who have a pride issue or sometimes a low self-image to where it's a detriment, they can't run a business. They can't be successful. Or they can't partner with somebody. They either don't value themselves or they don't value the other person. So this people component to me is really one of the most important things for success.
Well, and to go back to one of the original points and to throw something else, Albert Einstein made a comment or a quote from Albert Einstein, information is not knowledge. See, we're in a society where we have lots and lots of information, but information is not knowledge. Without any understanding, it's just information. And so what tends to happen, and this is why I'm actually have such a passion for this course, is because lots of people have lots of information, but they don't know how to take any of the information and apply it with any type of understanding. And so therefore they just have information, they have no knowledge. And so the part of this course that I really want to get into is that with people, your process, products, perceptions, and perspectives, one of the things that is by Leonardo da Vinci, it says all knowledge has its origin in our perceptions. So the knowledge side of things is based off of perception. Now, one of the previous things I said was, are the people unbiased? And that's in, well, my business is going to be XYZ. Well, Marcus Lemonis, you'll find out, he'll just say, well, the numbers are off. They're over-exaggerated. They're inconsistent with actual reports. They didn't do any of their research. So, in other words, there's no process. So they'll have a product. They'll sometimes have some people. But they might not have a process. Or even if they got the people, the process, and the product, their perception and perspective is wrong. And so, therefore, they'll say, well, the brand is everything. And he'll prove the next year, when they take the brand away, that the brand didn't actually mean anything to anybody. It was, how did the ice cream taste? So, again, it goes back to an original solid basis. It gets rid of all fallacies, all inconsistencies, all bias, all predeterminations or prejudgments. It gets rid of all of that. And so in this part of this point, if you don't understand people, well, you're going to lose your people. But if your process is off, which you could be very productive at, you'll fail at. And if you just have a bad product, then you can also lose people. But none of them are actually as bad as your perceptions and perspectives. Because if those are off, it doesn't matter if you have the best people, the best process, or the best product. You'll lose all three of them based off of your perspective and perception. So it doesn't matter. Why? Because, see, one again, I made the comment that trust is proof of how you value others. So if you won't trust people, then this is proof that you don't value them. And so what happens is then the people that you do have, you lose because you're demonstrating to them that you don't value them. You don't value their opinion. And because you don't value their opinion, then they won't add to you the things that are available in them because you didn't bother to value them as a person. And so the question is, are you consistent? And if you're consistent on a regular basis with people, then you build a relationship. The stronger the relationship you have with them, the more trust that is built. Therefore, the more trust that is built, the more you demonstrate that you value them. The more that you value them, then you're adding something to them because, see again, principle of substitution. What are you adding? Because now they have relationship, because they have access to you. Now you're adding something in them that they weren't before. So now they're more of a person, which builds more trust. And so then it consistently goes up and up and up because you demonstrated on the first end that you value them because you trusted them. But a lot of people say, well, I don't trust them in everything. Well, great. Trust them where you can. And if your trust never extends any further, then that's proof to them that you don't really trust them. Because, see, trust has to grow. Otherwise, it has no addition. And so if trust is not being added, then it causes problems in the relationship. And so one of the things I was just studying it's called CAYM, C-A-Y-M, which is Christian Association of Youth Mentors. And so I was studying one of the particular products. And they said there's three basic types of trust levels. There's healthy trust, which is, it starts at, if you're doing a graph, it starts on the bottom left-hand corner, and it goes up at, in a sense, a straight 45 over time. And so the trust goes up, but it goes up over time. And it goes up at an even rate. Now you have the mistrusting individual. Well, he starts out with actually a higher amount of trust, goes up very quickly, but always tanks out very soon, and then starts building back up gradually. And so it's more like a Z format on your graph. Now, the last one, which is considered unhealthy trust, they have absolutely no trust whatsoever, and that goes on for a while, and then they go up very high at a very quick rate because you pass that I don't trust you level. Now, for most of my life, I've actually fit in that category of I won't give you the time of day for probably some time. I'll find out if you're even going to bother to stick around. After I find out that you are willing to at least stick around, then I will give you a little bit of trust that will probably take a while. I'll see how you do with that. Once I realize you'll do good with that, I'll give you all my trust. But that takes time. So that being said, is the trust side is proof. Now, sometimes you can increase that trust level through the other person by giving them trust that they don't yet deserve. And so you can increase the process or increase the productivity of the relationship by giving trust that they haven't deserved at that particular moment, yet you believe based on previous record that they are still somewhat trustworthy. And so then to test them on a new level, and this is where we actually get a lot of our promotions from, is they haven't actually proven that they're at that trust level yet. But based on their previous record, I'm going to go ahead and put them in a situation that they're not really qualified for. But if I'll trust them, then I show that I value them at that level. And so now I'm adding something to them that they might not even have. And this is where you can add to the relationship at an exponential level. Because if you have a lot, and if they'll just take a little bit of trust, you can take a person that really is not necessarily the best leader or those kind of things, but because you have a trust in them and they have a trust in you and they have some character and integrity and they value themselves, they'll be willing to come under and step to the value that you set them at. Yes. And so, but if you won't bother to actually put any trust in them, then it won't actually push them into that new level.
That's really strong right there, too, because basically to the value often that you believe in people, they'll rise up to that. There's a book that I've recommended for years, and it's an older book, but it's called The Friendship Factor, and the author's name is Alan Loy McGinnis. And I tell everybody, you know, it's a short little pocket book. I actually cry after I read the whole thing at the end of it, but it's all about people. It's really all about, the short version, is the way in which you believe people, good or bad, is the way that they're going to respond to you most of the time, you know, maybe not 100%. But the concept is you actually have an impact on the value of the relationship you have with other people, consciously or subconsciously. If you think, oh, it's going to be good, most of the time it'll be good. If you believe it's going to be bad, you've already predetermined your interactions, your body language, your how you talk to people, the way you treat them, and they literally feed off of that. And they either rise or fall to the expectation you have.
Well, and again, not everybody's going to rise to that occasion. And people do need to be aware that just because I trust and that I can add something doesn't mean that they're going to hit that expectation. But the question has to come into it also of what were their perceptions and perspective. What was the standard you actually set? Because, see, lots of times we set a standard, but we don't make the standard clear. And so our belief that they didn't hit the mark is actually inaccurate because we didn't actually weight them fairly. See, we gave them a weighted analysis, but never told them any of the rules. And so they're trying to measure up to a bar that doesn't exist. And so, therefore, their incentive, and especially a lot of people say, well, I don't really feel like I can grow in a particular area. Well, the question is, what's the bar? Well, they'll say, oh, man, you can go all the way to the moon. Well, that's great. Where's the rocket ship? What's it look like? Because, see, if I was an engineer and I'm building a rocket ship, then I need XYZ components in order to get there. But if you don't make the rules clear, but tell me I can go to the moon, then while I'm building it, I have no plan. And so therefore, regardless if you trust me or not, I can't actually hit it because my perceptions and perspective's wrong. I may know that I need XYZ, but you say, no, you need Y through Z only. And I go, okay, well, I don't have Y through Z. I've got A to X. And so that's where that trust side says, well, I can give you these other 2 points. And so therefore you can hit this success marker. You can build this rocket ship and this is how you can get to this point. But if you won't lay out what that is, then you'll actually diminish the trust. They'll lose belief in their own character integrity because they stop valuing their ability to accomplish anything. And so this is where people start to devalue themselves in this side of it, is because of the switch, because it becomes inconsistent. it switches on them. All the rules switch about halfway. And so now they go, well, I don't know how to get there. I don't know how anything's weighted. I don't know what the rules are. And so people like to know what the rules are. And so one of the quotes I also like, it says, knowledge is like money. To be of value, it must circulate. And in circulating, it can increase in quality and hopefully in value. And that was by Lucius L'Amour. And really a part of this whole course, before we hop into right into the next point, is Herbert Spencer made the comment, the great aim of education is not knowledge, but action. So for me to teach you all these things and there's no action, there's no, let me try to put this in play, then it won't actually benefit you over a long amount of time.
Yeah, just so everybody knows, we're definitely going to cover that once you get these building blocks done. The action piece is definitely the biggest piece of this whole puzzle.
Well, and that's what we'll also be doing some of our future coaching as well, is so that we can actually take some of these basic principles. But once you start really knowing that some of these points and perspectives work like this, you'll step back and you'll look at, okay, what do I need to know differently? And what is something that if I were to know this, it would give me a different perspective or a different perception of my life, and that would give me the ability to really just kind of observe some things. And so one of the things that was by Marlon Vos Savant, to acquire knowledge, one must study. See, this is the studying part. And the other half of that, but to acquire wisdom, one must observe. Now, what's interesting to me is when you really understand knowledge is such a key point to understanding, to wisdom, man, you'll start learning like crazy. You'll see something and you'll go, huh, I don't really know that. I don't really understand that. And so that'll give you a different perspective when you look at it and you'll go, man, I really need to learn something about that. And so this is where you start acquiring massive amounts of information and knowledge. Because you'll realize that really, in lots of aspects, you don't know anything. It says, real knowledge is to know the extent of one's ignorance. And this was by Confucius. So the more I have learned, the more I have realized I don't know. And Socrates made the comment that to know is to know that you know nothing. That is the meaning of true knowledge. And the longer I've done this, the more I realize I don't know anything. Because I used to think, well, once I learn this, then I'll know so much more. But the more I study about value, the more about value I realize I don't know. And so it's this perpetual building block. And so, guys, even in this entire seminar, I cannot teach you the amount of vast amounts of information and knowledge that specifically pertain to this subject. However, if I can teach you how to value things in general, how to value knowledge, how to value people, how to value numbers, how to value your time, and how to value relationships or your influence, if I can teach you how to value that properly, it'll change your perception, it'll change your perspective, it'll change your paradigms, and if I can change your paradigms, then no matter how you look at the situation, you'll look at it differently. And so this is really one of the big parts of this entire thing.
Sean, you had said one time in one of your seminars I attended, you were talking about the feedback loop. And you were talking about the difference between a feedback, making adjustments versus being static. And this was tied into this concept of people, process, product. And those who receive the feedback where you're able to make changes and adjustments versus remaining static and then valuing the feedback. you know, not every feedback you get is valid, but at least being receptive to it. So I don't know if you could comment on that for us.
Well, and see, that kind of goes also back to the life cycle chart, guys. See, are you in growth? You in stability? You in decline? Are you in renewal? So in the growth process or the renewal process, that's where you have to get some new feedback. See, that loop is in that section. Now, that's part of the process. See, that's where I said at the beginning of this, guys, you can't really get away from these CDs. Because this is kind of, it determines your process side. And so when you go look at a product, like I've told you in a lot of the seminar things and just personally, is I'm never set on a particular perspective. Why? As long as it doesn't go against a core personal character integrity value of who I am, who cares? You know, if pink sells better today than purple tomorrow, who cares? If that's what the trend is today, well, great. If everybody hates purple and it's going to cost me $2 million on this product, unless my company is pretty in purple, I probably don't need to stick to purple. And this is where people get hung up on ideas. We are. Based off of what? Is there any process? What's the product? What's your perception? Just because it's your perception doesn't mean it's the majority's perception. And see, very successful entrepreneurs, businessmen, billionaires will all tell you, you know, there's three basic products. You have an economy, a middle, and a luxury. Why? Perspective and perception. Because see, the luxury guy, He doesn't want it if it's cheap. He doesn't want it if everybody can have it because it would give a wrong perception. Somebody might look at him, oh, you have that? But if he says, no, I have the best one of them, oh, then, well, apparently the perception's different. But if you're not willing to listen to any feedback, you're not willing to say, hey, you know, and again, Marcus Lemonis, he really capitalizes specifically on this. And so not to steal his information or, you know, whatever the case is. But he made the comment. He says, why would you go launch a product without ever bothering to get people in study groups or looking at it and giving you some feedback or critique? And so, again, I never get stuck on a particular idea unless, again, it goes against a core value. Because I can't have something that just goes against everything I am as a product to sell to people if I don't believe in it. That just goes against me. And so, are you willing to be unbiased? It goes back to see a lot of these basic principles, guys. Are you unbiased? Are you really willing to say, okay, I don't care how this looks. I don't even care if I like it. And I'll actually be discussing a particular deal in the numbers section in just a little bit. But one of my friends, we've done a particular deal, and he didn't like the investment house. But the numbers look really good. And see, and this is why we'll be talking about it in numbers. But see, so many people say, well, I got to love the house. No, you don't. Why? Because, see, you got a wrong perception. You have a perception that is based off of what you like. You have a perspective that if I don't like it, I can't do it. Well, investors never care if they like it. They only care, do the numbers line up lots of times. Homeowners care if they like it, not investors. So the question is, when you go into the deal, why'd you go into it? And then are you willing to pay for a perception or your perspective out of your pocket? So, for example, like I've told people, is I don't care if you buy a new car. I just want you to know when you drove it off the lot, you lost money. Why? Because your perception that a new car means a better car. No, it actually doesn't. Sometimes the car that you really want is the used car because it has the fully luxury packages at the price that you can actually afford. But they'll say, no, I have to have a new car. Me personally, I like buying a car that's approximately one year old because that's your best value. The car has little to no miles, usually is in mint to excellent condition, and it's lost 80% of its depreciation already, and so therefore you get it at an excellent price. And so that's where I get into that, which brings us into our next point. Our next point that we're going to get into is the five types of value. And I had touched on this briefly, but we're going to get into a little more detail. You have five types, which is market value, value in use, investment value, insurable value, and liquidation value. Now, this being said, market value is what we consider value that the normal person, normal perspective, the more specific definition is a willing and knowledgeable buyer under no compulsion that is willing to buy it. That is what kind of the abbreviation of what market value definition is. Well, number one, can't be under compulsion. Well, a lot of people say, well, I bought it at market value. No, you didn't. You bought it at above market value because you had additional perceptions or perspectives or biased opinions that you put into the deal that are really based off of you. And so a lot of times people don't even buy things at market value. They just say it's at market value. So you have to be knowledgeable and willing. Well, lots of times people go into it, they have no understanding about value at all. And so they go buy a house that needs $50,000 worth of work. The market will only support the house at, say, $150,000, and they buy it for $110,000. So now they've got $160,000 in a house that is only worth $150,000, so they lose $10,000 because they didn't actually buy it at market value, because, see, market value would have been somewhere between the investment value and liquidation value. So market value is to buy a $150,000 house for $150,000. So that's where most people don't actually buy a house. They actually buy a house that needs some work done to it, and then they buy it at or just below market value, but call it market value. Okay, the next one we're going to get into is called value in use. This is actually one of my favorite ones because it explains so many different things for so many different people. They'll say, well, it costs XYZ to build, but you're going to tell me you only get X out of it. So, for example, lots of times in-ground pools marketably, this is as a general range, this is not specific, but lots of times if a pool costs $25,000 to $30,000 to install, marketably you're only going to get $7,500 to $15,000 back out of it. Why? Because they're not paying for what it costs to put it there. They are paying you for the use of it. Employers use this principle all the time. They're not paying you for you going to school for 4 years because that's $60,000. They're not paying you for that. They are paying you for the use of your time, the value in use. In other words, they're paying you for while I have you, I'm going to pay you a certain amount of money for your use to my company. Now, if that's not actually beneficial or helping, then it's not a value that's helping them. So even in that scenario, they can't really use you at that level because it's an expertise that's not necessarily beneficial to them. The next one we're going to get into is investment value. Investment value is always based off of what its return is going to be, not based off of actually its cost. So, for example, if we were doing a rental property, or a flip. Okay, so a rental property, I would buy it at, say, $100,000, but it's going to pay me $700 or $1,000 a month until I get rid of the property. Well, that's the investment that I have in it is $100,000. Its return on investment, or ROI, is going to be different because it's based off of a return, not based off the initial investment value. Investment value shows what you have invested. So the question is, what did you invest? This has nothing to do with its value and use. That's more your rental. The market value is what someone's willing to pay for it.
Well, and this is a good perspective too, Sean. I know, you know, when we met umpteen years ago, I was doing a lot of real estate. This is important for those listening. Your investment value is the value you place on it. That's your money.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not necessarily equal to the market value or to what somebody else may pay for it. It could be more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if you're investing, you would like for your personal investment value to be under the market value. That's what you're saying. So I want people to understand that this value concept, it is kind of a two-way street. If I could give one more example, don't want to take the platform here, but I had a boss when I was in the government contracting world, great negotiator, made me attend several classes on negotiating. And here in America, we don't quite understand it as much on a day-to-day level. You know, you go to the store, you buy a toothbrush, it's $2, you pay $2, you get the toothbrush. But in a lot of European areas, in the Middle East, I know you had experience with this on your travels with the Navy, you go and you barter, or you don't barter, but you negotiate. And so they don't even put the price on the thing. And so you want that toothbrush, and you say, well, how much is it? And they say, well, how much are you willing to pay? And so depending on your concept, you might say, I'm going to see if I can get a deal. I want a dollar. I want it for a dollar. Then the merchant will tell you, how about $3? And then you come back and say, well, the best I can do is two, and you agree on that. And so everybody's happy because the buyer feels like they got it for a lower price. The seller feels like they got it for more than what they paid for it, and everybody's happy. So sometimes that whole concept of, like what Shaw's talking about, this market value, this investment value, it's the meeting in the middle where the real value is. It's what a willing, what do you say, a willing buyer is willing to pay for it, and a willing seller is willing to sell. So, and that can fluctuate.
And on one of the sides, I'm going to give you a huge giveaway. Went to several seminars, and I've heard this several times, but this is just a major negotiating rule. Whoever mentions money first loses. So, because, for example, the toothbrush, we'll use the toothbrush example. Number one, what's his sweat equity? See, that has a certain investment value. Number two, what was the cost to make the toothbrush? So he said $3 because he knows he has $1.50 in it. Okay, but the market value was $2. Why? Because that's what y'all agreed on. Because probably that was not the first time he had heard $2. Now, the fact of that you can use it every day and save yourself from going to the dentist, it may be worth $10 to you. Because that's the value in use. And so, and you have insurance, and they say if you brush and floss and do all these things, that we're going to reduce maybe some of your insurance because, see, that's insurable value of your teeth. See, these things are literally everywhere every single day, and people don't realize them.
And, of course, it depends on if you've cornered the market on toothbrushes in that area, yeah, or there's another toothbrush person on every corner. The other thing, I love these little nuggets that you're putting out here with negotiating as well. You mentioned who mentions price first usually loses. The other one is there was some scientific study. This was from Dr. Karras. I took some of his seminars, and he's the first kind of business person to study negotiating. But he said the person that makes the most extreme offer usually gets closer to what they want. And so, as an example, I used to do this with my son, right? And so, if he would say, example, hey, you know, I want to make some money. I don't know, whatever it is. I can't think of a good example right now. But let's just say he wants $10 and all he wants to do is, you know, wake up in the morning. Well, I might say, well, I'll give you a penny for that, you know, or I might even say, hey, if I want to be really extreme, I say, well, I'll tell you what, if you don't want to do anything and get and exchange some money, why don't you pay me $10 for the food I'm providing for you today or the electricity that's in the house? Now, if you want to do some work, I'll pay you for the work. And then if he thinks, well, I'll take the trash out, and he might say, well, I think it's worth 20. I say, well, I think it's worth 2. So I'm gonna extremely go against the other person's offer if I'm trying to really win somewhere in the middle, but more towards my side. So your toothbrush merchant, I offer $1, and he really wants $3, right? So instead of him saying, well, how about $3, because that's what he wants, he needs to go swing high and, say $10 for the toothbrush, and then you agree, well, how about 2 or 3, you know, and then so whoever makes the most extreme offer, in other words, that's all I was trying to say, will usually get closer to what they really want.
My son makes that example all the time. Again, you might want to limit some of the stuff you teach your kids, especially the younger they are, because the time they get 16, 17, they have actually become quite fluent in some of these principles. So you may want to wait till they're about 15 to start teaching them some. I thought I was doing a benefit to my children, which I did to my children, but not necessarily my checkbook. And so my son, for example, it was just about 2 weeks ago. He said, hey, Dad, can I have $30? I said, what do you need $30 for? He said, well, I want to get things. I said, well, it don't really cost that much. Will you give me 10 then? I was like, well, yeah, sure. So he got me. In like 2 seconds, I said, well, why'd you ask for 30? He said, so when I asked you for 10, it didn't seem like such a big number. And so, again, when you start teaching your kids some of these things about value and what do you add and these different principles, then they will take these principles and they'll actually apply it to every little detail in their own life. And so the next one we want to talk about is insurable value. Insurable value is always slightly different. Insurable value isn't limited to the product itself or necessarily its use or its market value. Insurable is what do you think that if this is lost, it can return. So, for example, if you're going to get insurance on a house, you get the insurance, say the house is worth $200,000. Lots of times the insurance will be for, say, $225,000 or $250,000. But that doesn't actually include the land value because, see, they have to deal with tearing it down, fixing it up, loss, hotels. So your insurance value is higher. Well, that doesn't actually necessarily include only market value or only its use or only your sweat equity or investment value or just what it would be liquidated for. So this can be a whole separate number that is calculatable, that you say, okay, well, if I were to lose this particular thing, how much would it cost me? And so this is also just another one of the principles. This is used kind of on a separate side of the things, but it's still one of the types of value. The last one is liquidation value. This is where most investors actually do their investing. They're not buying it at market. Market, again, we'll use for just general examples, is a $150,000 house. Well, they're not going to buy it for $150,000. They're going to buy it for about $80,000. They want to make $20,000, but it needed $50,000 in repairs. And so they have worked in their profit at $20,000. But lots of times they'll increase the percentage just a little bit. They'll say, no, I got to make $30,000, so I can only buy it for $70,000 because I'm going to put $50,000 in the house. And then in case something goes wrong, I'm going to put an additional $10,000 for holding cost mistakes. I missed something and it cost me more money. This is more of your just making sure, again, your allotments that you have designed or set into the system, to give yourself some breathing room. So these principles is kind of the different values. So whenever you're trying to do something, you have to ask yourself, which value are you looking at? So in other words, if you're dealing with people, we'll switch this whole subject kind of over to people a little bit, is how much do they bring to an area? That's their market value. That's what they actually bring to the situation. That's what they bring to the overall atmosphere. That's what others see as a good price for them. So the next one is, to you, what is your use for them? So what's their value that they're adding to you? And so that's not always the same. It can be changed slightly. It's not always limited to just one side. And so their value, what are they adding? Well, that can change based on their knowledge. That can be changed based on their ability. That can change based on what skills they have improved in. And so, therefore, that value that they add to you can become higher and higher and higher, depending on their use to you. Now, lots of times people get a mindset that one person only has one use. And so when they do that, when they get a mentality, then they're missing their market value, investment value, insurable value, and liquidation value. The next one is investment value. Just because you have spent a lot of time with someone, just because you have a lot of time that you have invested in someone, doesn't necessarily mean that you can get value used out of them or market value. And plus two, the question is, did you actually add it to them, or did you just assume that you added to them? And so you gotta make sure when you're looking at that you may have more vested than they're producing, because you're trying to look at value in use based off of your investment value. So you may have a lot invested in them, but you're not getting the use out that you think because you're looking at the wrong value. And so the question is what is their maybe market value, insurable value, or liquidation value? And not to try to make it sound mean, but lots of times, just breaking these things down into this perspective will kind of give you a different sense of how you're looking at things. Insurable value, well, how much are they bringing to your company? I mean, for example, you can get insurance now if you lose your job. So what's the value that they are bringing to a particular organization, and so therefore you can actually get insurance on that factor? The last one is liquidation value. Liquidation value, in reference to people, is this actually happens lots of times in relationships. They get divorced. Well, they can have a certain value at the end of the day. And I was actually talking to someone. I said, celebrities get married and get divorced. They have one of the highest divorce rates of any couple there is. But here's the thing. They know at the beginning when they get married what the market value of the relationship is going to be. They know that, hey, when we do this, we can make probably $2 to $5 million off of just getting married. Then we know while we're married that all these people are going to be happy and want to give us videos and shoots and vacations because, you know, so-and-so went on vacation. So that's the use of the marriage. That's its in use. Then it's based off of what they actually got invested in it. Well, lots of times because they're married, they put some, you know, just basic investment into the marriage. And so, therefore, lots of times just the investment itself exploded. And then when they liquidate the marriage, they still make money. And so they're using this principle on 5 or 6 different levels. And then they can even get insurance. I know one celebrity, she has her legs insured for $1 million each. Just her legs. Why? Because to mess legs up like that, obviously they're worth $1 million each. Well, people say, well, that's crazy. Yeah, but they're making millions off of it. And I spoke to my attorney. We were trying to do a particular deal. And I had told my wife this statement. And she's like, well, that just doesn't make much sense to me. I said, well, I said, basically, if you disclose it and they sign, it's legal. I said, as a general rule, I said, the part that's messed up in the legal system is that as long as you disclose what you're going to do and why you're doing it, it's all legal. It's when you start trying to hide and make fraudulent statements and all those things that then it becomes illegal. But as long as I tell you, hey, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing it, and this is what you're agreeing to, it's always 100% legal. Or, well, not a lawyer, go get a lawyer. But that being said, is when you understand these principles, prime example, some men that have a lot of money and those kind of things before they get into marriage, what do they say? I want a prenup. Why? Because they're looking at the liquidation value of the marriage. And so lots of times they're planning for that. So, and people say, well, you know, that's messed up. Well, I don't necessarily disagree. In some aspects, it can be pretty wrong to the relationship. But if I had $10 million before I married you and you were broke, am I willing to give up half based on the concept of, well, we didn't agree? So I'm looking at what? Liquidation value. That's the whole purpose of a prenup. So if, again, people say, well, you know, I don't agree with that. Well, that's fine. I'm not telling you to agree. I'm not saying, I'm just saying based off of your weighted analysis in your own personal life, how are you weighting this stuff? So you get to make that decision. You get to make the decision if you do it that particular way. So, but this is just some basic principles. You know, now let's switch this over to time a little bit, okay? How about market value of your time? Well, market value of my time right now is basically $100 an hour minimum. Over the next couple of things, it will probably quadruple or more in just a short amount of time. Why? That's what people are willing to pay me consistently right now. Well, the use of my time in a couple other endeavors that I'm doing, which is some real estate stuff, when it's probably said and done, is probably close to about $600 an hour. Now, when I switch to only doing decisions, it will be $1,000 to $2,000 an hour because that time can change. The use of my time can change. Depending on how I use it, the market value can change. So, but my investment value is the same hour. Okay. Now, what I have in the hour, remember, I think it was John Rowe made the comment, is you don't get paid for the hour. You get paid for what you bring to the hour. Jim Rowe. And so lots of times my investment value is still 1 hour, but I might have 20 years in that 1 hour. And so my investment value for that hour is different than people think it is. They might say, well, it's only worth $100. I think it's worth 20 years. And so, therefore, that is different. And again, I touched on insurable. You can get paid to, you know, when you get hurt and those kind of things, get insurance. But see, I know worst case scenario, no matter how bad it actually goes, that if I were to liquidate my time, I can still go get a job between $8 and $15 an hour. That's based liquidation value of my time. And so, therefore, it might not be the best value of my time, but it's the bare minimum that I know I can get on a consistent level. And so whenever I know the different values of my time, I can switch it. I can change it. I can make it switch to how I actually want it to.
Okay. Here's my question. As we're wrapping up here. We're getting ready to transition to the numbers side of things. That'll be our next session. So I would like everybody to just really, you're probably going to need to listen to this again, and understand these principles for the knowledge piece of value. Because they're going to all come into play over the next several hours of training as we get into more building blocks. The numbers will still be some building blocks. But Sean's going to start showing us how to apply these, not just in the real estate world, but in your day-to-day life. And like I might have said before, I've seen this guy do it with cooking a meal. It's just amazing. But it will build your influence. It will build your success with people, in your finances, in your marriages, in your spiritual life. A lot of times people don't realize it's not always just making better decisions, but avoiding bad ones. If you take the time to think about it in the terms of value, it will save you a lot of lost time and money and emotional heartache. So I want everybody to take some time to kind of re-listen to what we've talked about so far, and then I want to see whatever Sean has to wrap up for us, but I hope you understand the importance of it.
Well, and I'm going to just do a quick wrap-up on really what's the whole point of all this? We spent, you know, 3 hours now talking specifically about knowledge. What's the big deal? Knowledge is the thing that is weighed at the end of the day. And if you don't have any to weigh, you'll always make a decision wrong. One of the quotes that I'll probably get into some on the next chapter I really did like, and it was talking about numbers, but the part of it that was so kind of interesting to me is that it says that the value of a principle is the number of things it will explain. And that was Ralph Waldo Emerson. So this knowledge segment will explain so many different things. It'll explain, how did I come to that conclusion? How did I come to that? Really, what consideration did I really give it? How did I get to that original hypothesis? It's based off of something you knew. It's based off of some biased or unbiased opinion you had, based off of some prejudice or prejudgments or determination. It's based off of something that you had. It's based off of a way you decided to weight something. It's based off of a method you use. So what method did you use? Now, there's proper methods and improper methods. But if you never bother to really take that knowledge that you have and put it into some practical application, then it'll cost you. And like I had said in one of the first CDs, the reason why I'm so passionate about doing this is because I just don't want people to go through what it cost me. And I went through so many of these things because I didn't really consider my perspectives or my perceptions. I didn't really think about what I was doing, what I was adding, what people were adding to me, what the relationship looked like. And so I know, guys, that if you'll really just kind of take a new look at knowledge, how much can this help me? How much can this change my life if I will just look at things differently? And so that being said, guys, thank you so much. We'll see you on the next part with numbers. And we'll get into a nice long discussion on how some just practical things about numbers can also help change your life. God bless. Thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day.